Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan on Wednesday, October 14, 2021. South Sudan's Minister of Education says 15 students submitted fake certificates for admission to universities.
We disqualified those candidates. We did not stop from there. But we also send their names to the Ministry of General Education and Instruction.
And authorities in Jonglei State have banned the consumption of alcohol.
We see that it is not good for the community. We come up with a resolution, and that conference has been attended by 72 people in 9 a.m.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Minister of Higher Education says some students applying for university admissions have used fake certificates. Gabriel Changson Chang says the ministry has yet to acquire an automatic document detector to catch students presenting fake certificates when applying to join universities in the country. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Minister Gabriel Changson Chang says the issue of fake certificates is a big problem in South Sudan because it affects the quality of education. He says this year alone, education officials detected 15 fake certificates while admitting students to the country's public universities.
We disqualified those candidates. We did not stop from there, but we also sent their names to the Ministry of General Education and Instruction for further investigations, because it is that ministry which is responsible for secondary and primary education. The year before we detected 13, so a list of 28 fake certificates was sent to the Ministry of General Education for further scrutiny.
Chang says the Higher Education Ministry has tried its best to detect fake certificates using an old detecting machine, but loopholes still exist. He says during admission to public universities, education officials often ask the administrators of the 5 public universities to submit their requirements, including the number of students they want to enroll in that academic year and in the different faculties. Chang says education officials in charge of admissions then open enrollment to interested candidates. He says if the Higher Education Ministry does not meet the number of students required, they advertise for a second round for students to apply, and if there are still vacancies, they allow universities to admit students directly. He says it is at that point when some applicants use fake certificates to apply for admission to universities.
In our regulation, we require all universities to receive applications for direct admission from students. They process them. Before admitting them, they send them back to admission office to be verified. So that if there were fake certificates in those applications, they will be weeded out. That is one. Two, also we need to verify them for whether they are going to the right faculties using the right percentages. Sometimes they don't send them back to us because they don't comply with the requirements for the intake.
Chang says that process often causes students to miss a national number, something he says will affect the students while applying for further studies or for jobs, particularly in public service. He says scrutinizing documents manually or using an old machine to detect fake certificates not only slows down admission, but provides a loophole for dishonest students.
Fight forgery is a delicate one. It needs facilities, like get fake document detecting machines. We are working with a very old one and very only the only one. It takes time for us to process thousands of certificates for intake. So we are unable also to get those machines, not only to make it difficult also for detecting the forged certificates, but it is also difficult for us to process university intake in time.
Chang says the way forward is to strengthen the university admission process and obtain an updated automatic detecting machine to cross-check documents.
We should be provided with the necessary machines, detecting machines, so that all the certificates passing through us will be verified and fake ones will be put aside, will be disqualified.
Chang says his ministry is conducting investigations into the 28 students suspected of forgery and will pursue legal actions against them. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Authorities in Jonglei State's Urur County have banned the sale and consumption of all alcoholic drinks in the county. The county commissioner says several young people died after allegedly consuming alcohol. An aid worker who has been encouraging young people to stay sober says alcohol is destroying the future of many South Sudanese. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Urur County Commissioner Tang Chatim says before local officials instituted the ban 2 weeks ago on all alcohol in Urur County, at least 15 young people were killed in fighting caused by alcohol consumption. Chatim says officials hope the ban will put an end to alcohol-related violence and restore peace in the area. He also says 9 people, including those suspected of committing murder while under the influence of alcohol, have been arrested in the area. The commissioner says he issued the order banning the consumption of locally made brews and imported alcohol across Urur County following a resolution adopted by county and community leaders who were attending a conference late last month.
We see that it is not good for the community. We come up with a resolution, and that conference has been attended by 72 people in 9 a.m. We say that the alcohol which have been brought from Juba have been burned, and we started to burn almost 36 cartons of alcohol which have been called Royal Gin. We burned them. The local alcohol we have been produced by sugar also we stop it in the area not to be used.
Chatham says the preparation, sale or consumption of any kind of liquor, including locally brewed alcohol, is prohibited in the county. And authorities have already arrested individuals who violated the ban.
Now we arrested almost 5 of people. They are in the custody, and also we arrested the killers, about 4. They are in prison. We're waiting for the supply from the state to come and evacuate them to the prison in Bor.
Richard Ruati, an aid worker who has been promoting sobriety among young people, welcomes the ban on the sale and consumption of alcohol. Ruati says drinking alcohol has enslaved many young South Sudanese.
It's a good thing to do, because the alcohol is really the destroying young people in many aspects. It's destroying family bondages, and it is destroying the progress and economy of young people, because, you know, when young people get a salary or small money they get from the work they do, they use that money for alcohol. It is destroying their, not only their health, but also their progress.
Ruati urges national leaders to control and restrict the importation of alcohol into the country in order to save the nation's young people.
And I hope that kind of effort that they are doing in general can be rolled out in South Sudan or across South Sudan. Because even the government need to restrict the kind of alcohol products they are importing to South Sudan. Because there is one thing of cracking down on those who are consuming it, but also it's another one to restrict the import. Because if those people who are importing it are stopped from importing, then the young people in South Sudan will be safe. That's the thing. Even where alcohol is in the Western world, there is a limit of how much alcohol someone can take in a bar or in the community.
Ruati says he consumed alcohol before quitting in 2018. He is urging young people to refrain from drinking and says if a person is an addict or alcoholic, they should seek counseling from experts in order to recover. Pal Bill, the head chief in Huror County, says the ban on alcohol has helped maintain law and order, and the community has witnessed relative stability in the last few days.
We don't like the alcohol here in Huror. The root cause is that the people in Huror or the youth, they will kill them according of the alcohol in Huror County.
Ajang Garang Kwarwil, the chairperson of Jonglei State Chamber of Commerce, says he agrees it is a good thing to regulate the consumption of the alcohol. But he says banning all types of alcohol could cause some local businesses to fail, since some traders in Huror County only deal in alcohol.
There are different types of alcoholic, the strong ones, such as whiskey and others. There are also less strong types of alcoholics. Well, traders do not like to bring something to destroy the community. But I see that it could be regulated by law so that there are time to drink and time not to drink. And also who should drink. For example, alcoholics should not be sold to children under age of 18.
Kwarwil is urging authorities in Huror County to review the ban on alcohol and consider instead enacting rules to regulate the consumption and sale of alcoholic beverages. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor, Jonglei State.
The Central Equatorial State Government have evicted several former officials who have been illegally occupying government houses in Juba. The Minister for Local Government and Law Enforcement in Central Equatoria says the state law allows former officials to stay in government houses for 3 to 6 months only. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Francis Barsund, a former information minister in Central Equatorial State, who is now a lecturer at the University of Juba, says state officials directed the Minister of Law Enforcement to dispatch police to his residence and threw out his belongings. Barsund admits he received a warning from state authorities about a week ago to vacate the house, but he says he objected because the state has yet to pay his post-service benefits.
Warning only for 7 days. Sometimes back, but the dues were not given, and when the warning was given, we had to go to the Minister of Justice, because that is the right person to decide on how constitutional post holders should be treated in terms of eviction. So the minister wrote to the governor requesting that they have a meeting such that they can agree on amicable solution. Unfortunately, the governor couldn't do it. And then immediately he sent the police, just the day before yesterday. The police came and said they were coming again today. Yesterday they couldn't throw me out because there was rain. And so they came today in big number with their workers, and my things are now outside.
Barsund says he contacted the State Ministry of Justice over the matter and asked to be given more time to move out of the government house. He says the Justice Ministry referred him to the Central Equatorial State Attorney General. He says it is a shame to see former constitutional post holders like himself treated this way and evicted on such short notice.
Up to now, according to what the police told me, those who came to me, they said 7 people have been affected and they are still going ahead. We have about 54 people. But of course, we are just people who are not soldiers. I don't know what they will do to the soldiers, those who are officers. Because there are generals in the army. I don't know whether they will also be thrown out. I don't know. So we are affected seriously. And I don't know what to do.
James Moga, another former state official, accuses state authorities of being inconsiderate, especially since they are evicting individuals during the rainy season. He says the former officials did not receive a prior notification earlier and were surprised to see police officers moving their belongings outside.
The law says you must give some time, especially in the rainy season like this. You must give some time because you cannot evict somebody during the rainy season, you know. You cannot throw somebody's property outside in the rain. You need to have, because some people have children who are in the neighboring schools around the residence, you need to make sure that the academic year has closed so that if they move to a new house, they need to transfer their children with them to new schools.
Central Equatoria State Minister of Local Government and Law Enforcement, Moro Genesio, says Governor Emmanuel Adil Anthony told him to execute the order to evict former state officials in Juba who continue to occupy government houses, but Genesio says he had yet to enforce the order.
I am still to issue a statement or final warning for their removal from the house. Something I do not have clue about. Maybe I will have to find out later. We don't really need to enforce them, but it's good that they have to come to the state secretariat and notify the administration that they are ready to quit, and the state secretariat should be able to send someone to pick the keys. That is what we want. We do not really want that inconveniences where we get involved into tussle with them, it will show a bad image.
Genesio says state laws give any former constitutional post holder between 3 and 6 months after being relieved from a political post before being evicted from a government property.
The reality is that these houses are for political appointees. And immediately someone is relieved, he has to stay there for 3 months and then he leaves the premises. Or if more, maybe 6 months only. But to our dismay, some of them have stayed now for more than expected since the appointment of the government in the current 10 states. They have been occupying this place. We wrote to legal administration to serve them with the notice.
Genesio says he does not know how many former officials still occupied government houses.
I can't establish exactly, because some of them were given by then the state government. It was given in respect like there are those veterans who are given government houses. There are also people from the national government who do not have space who are given government houses in the state. So we are segregating them. And it is difficult now for me to establish the exact number of people who are occupying government houses. But the number is large.
Basson says the state government should not be allowed to evict former officials before paying their service benefits. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, leaders of Berger community in Eastern Sudan want a new government. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Thousands of members of the Berger community in Eastern Sudan have continued to block major roads leading in and out of Port Sudan in Red Sea State. One of the leaders of the Berger community says his group will renew their call for a separate state should the transitional government in Sudan fail to engage with Berger representatives and resolve their grievances. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
It's day 28 since the Berger Community High Council started their peaceful sit-in on a road in Port Sudan, blocking all avenues leading in and out of the town and shutting down all refineries and other vital export installations. The community accuses the transitional government of doing very little to fulfill its promise to engage the community in discussing development issues in the region. The Berger High Council says it no longer recognizes the Eastern Trag Agreement, which was part of the comprehensive Juba peace deal signed a year ago between an umbrella of armed groups and Sudan's government. The Berger people say those who represented Eastern Sudan during the negotiations did not represent the people of Eastern Sudan. The Abidja community is threatening to separate from Sudan and create their own country if the government fails to address their political grievances. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus from Port Sudan town, Abdallah Obshar, the spokesperson of the Abidja community, says the sit-in will continue until the transitional government abandons the implementation of the Eastern Track and agrees to engage in a serious political dialogue with the community.
Our sit-in is currently in front of Bashar 1, the main refinery for Sudanese oil. Sawak in Port Sudan for livestock export and a passenger port are both shut down. All roads leading in and out of the capital, Port Sudan, to neighboring states such as Kassala, Gadarif, and Al Jazeera are all blocked.
Eastern Sudan is considered the main gateway into Sudan due to economic value of the region. It is the only port in the country and bountiful natural resources, including minerals and farmland. The Abidja leader says, throughout history, successive Sudanese governments have not shown any concern towards developing the eastern region despite being an economic stronghold in the country. Obshar says he wonders why the government officials refuse to listen to their demand and take the necessary steps to tackle the matter once and for all. He strongly advises the government against using force to remove the peaceful protesters.
We have never blocked a road to dialogue, but the reality of the issue is that we did not see any seriousness from the transitional government, who sent a delegation a month ago and committed themselves to fulfill their promises to us. We are now 27 days in, and we have not seen any positive steps from the government to resolve our issues.
Last week, Sudanese officials from the Ministries of Health and Finance announced the country was running out of basic commodities and life-saving drugs due to the blockage of the port and roads in eastern Sudan. Obshar condemned the statement, reiterating that the sit-in is peaceful and that the Abidja community values the lives of the Sudanese communities. He says, since day one of the sit-in, medicines, food items, and fuel are allowed to move in and out of Port Sudan town.
We don't have any intention of harming our brothers and sisters in other Sudanese states or in the capital. But this is one of the tools of the Sudanese revolution, which gives us the right for a peaceful protest, sit-in, and blockage of roads.
Sudanese journalist and political analyst Shuhdi Nadir says the sit-in amounts to an economic war on the government, which is struggling to restore the damage done by the 30-year rule of ousted President Omar al-Bashir. He says shutting down installations in Port Sudan not only affects the government, but will soon affect the Abidja community. He says many export and import companies are leaving the port because they cannot continue to operate at a loss.
For sure, when any businessmen don't find a conducive environment to conduct their business, they will definitely turn to look for other locations. This is not the first time we're seeing Port Sudan being shut down. Over the past 2 years, it was shut down many times by the same community, who doesn't seem to differentiate between the interests of the Sudanese people and the government, nor their own community.
In September last year, the deputy head of Sudan Sovereign Council, Muhammad Hamdan Dagalo, vowed during a conference in Sinkar town of Red Sea State to begin a peaceful dialogue over issues affecting eastern Sudan. The transitional government sent a delegation to Port Sudan last week, headed by Sovereign Council member Shamsuddin Kabashi, to meet with leaders of the Abidja community. But the visit bared no fruit. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Sudan, the General Intelligence Service in Sudan has denied imposing a travel ban on some government officials. Suleiman Baldo is a senior advisor on Sudan and the Horn of Africa at the Sentry, an investigative and policy group. He says there is high tension in Sudan between the civilian component of the power-sharing transitional government and the military.
As you know, the transition in the country is a power-sharing arrangement between the military component and a civilian-led executive council of ministers. They are supposed to steer the country to elections in 2 more years now. However, over the last few weeks, the civilian component has been under a lot of pressure from the head of the army and splinter groups from some political parties to diminish the executive authorities of the cabinet and force it into resignation. And I believe the decision to ban some of the officials, several of them ministers in the cabinet and some are members of the Sovereign Council, is part of this push by the military to occupy more space in the power-sharing arrangement than the symbolic protocol, symbolic powers that it has at the moment.
We understand one of those people allegedly banned from traveling is the individual who said that or accused the military of trying to use the attempted coup to seize power. Is this kind of coincidental?
Nothing is coincidental. All the officials who are all civilians supposedly banned from travel are ones who stood up for the claims by the military to claim more power than what is authorized under the constitutional arrangement governing the transitional period. And therefore, the military wants to see them purged from the government and to try and appoint in the public opinion people who are hardliners and so on. The only mistake being to stand up for the military in their attempt to encroach on powers that the constitutional document didn't award them.
The businessman that you said traveled to Egypt, who is also on the list, is he coming back to Sudan?
This is a political fight between two components in the transition, and the civilians are not going to stand down. In particular, the cabinet is supported by a large segment of the population. People want democracy. People want to have the country run by civilians and to have civilians oversee the military and their economic establishments. And this is the real source of the tension.
That's Suleiman Baldo, a senior advisor on Sudan and the Horn of Africa at the Sentry, an investigative and policy group. He was speaking with my colleague James Batty here in Washington. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with Mede Muzika and the song Labia Maro. We have been listening to Mede Muzika and the song Labi Amaro. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kamalu Fabona
Wanteko, Ongo Sozona.